Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Right Out Politics. Today is October 23rd, 2020. Thank you for tuning in. So today we're going to talk about the last presidential debate. Very interesting, much more cordial between the candidates. So a little bit of a change of pace from the first debate, but a lot of highlights, a lot of very telling moments. And I think we saw two different choices on stage, and the choice can't be clearer for the American people this election. So without further ado, let's jump into the analysis. Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy great city of Savannah.
Ooh, how's the weather up there?
The weather's much nicer, I have to tell you. Less humidity, not as hot. I'm happy I came up.
But wait a minute. Is it actual sweater weather or just, you know, less humidity?
It's not, no, less humidity. Not sweater weather. They need another month up here in order for them to get sweater weather. Besides, there's a cold front coming up from the north. But aside from that, so hopefully by next week, it'll be sweater weather.
Awesome. Awesome. Very nice. Very nice.
By the way, you're a slave driver. I just want to point that out. I'm on vacation, but you just had to have me on the show.
You volunteered as tribute. What am I going to do? You volunteer as tribute and say, no, I don't want tribute. Come on.
Well, let me play the victim card for 2 seconds. Jeez.
Nobody likes a victim, dude.
According to Biden voters, that's not necessarily the case.
Well, you know, that's an interesting conversation because while I was watching the debate, I was having this conversation with Chris, my husband. It almost seems like the Republican and Democrat Party have very distinct views on the world, not just on policy, but on how to react to situations. Republicans nowadays seem to have this kind of gung-ho attitude of, okay, we can do it, I can take on the challenge. And Democrats just seem scared of everything. Everything is, oh, a boogeyman, I need the big government to come and protect me. Like, it's getting to the point where this is no longer just a difference of policy, this is an existential difference of how you view the world.
I think that's absolutely right. But that being said, I have to say, last night's debate was by far the best debate of the three debates that were portrayed, or even the town halls, whatever you want to call them that. and they were just, and the moderator, I have to congratulate that NBC moderator. She did a phenomenal job. I have nothing but great allot to everybody who participated last night to that debate. It was a phenomenal one. The president did a very good job. And Joe stuttered half the time, but you know, he was there.
Well, I think Trump did an awesome job. And actually, there's a side to Trump that a lot of people don't see, but he had command of the facts. He was presidential. He deferred to the moderator when appropriate, thanked her for the question, thanked her for the job she was doing. This is a totally different Trump, but you know, we get to see the chameleon of Trump come out every once in a while, and you see kind of his adaptability to change the circumstances.
I don't think it was a chameleon per se. I think the issue is that here comes a moderator who's not going to debate him.
Well, I'm saying he's a chameleon in his ability to adapt. He can be adversarial when necessary. He can be gracious when necessary. There are some people that only have a baseline and can't go outside that baseline. Remember, he's become a caricature to the left. So his ability to adapt is surprising considering what his public stereotype and people's opinion of him is nowadays.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that when you think of it in that I agree with, and if you think of it in those terms, last night debate couldn't be a much better controlled debate, in the sense that I thought Trump made his point very clear without being angry. And I think that was my biggest thing. He made his point without being angry, and it worked.
Sometimes it's interesting how changing a tone, saying a thing, something differently can have such a different effect, right? First debate, the criticism was, hey, he's interrupting, even though Biden interrupted too. But in this debate, you know, he's gracious, he listens, he gives opportunity to the moderator to ask the question, gives opportunity for Biden to ask the question, but he doesn't lose his backbone. there's a certain kind of strength into what he portrayed last night that we have not seen from Trump this year. It was a very interesting debate to watch, just how both candidates kind of reacted to the situation. Biden started strong, and by midway through the 90 minutes, he was losing it. He
Oh,
was
absolutely.
not being coherent. I'm not sure if he was drinking coffee beforehand or what he took before, but whatever he was on, it lost its effect midway through.
Yeah, his Adderall didn't go all the way through. But anyways, and by the way, I'm Abraham Lincoln. I just want everyone to know that I thought that was absolutely stupid. That was a stupid. He says he's Abraham Lincoln.
And then Trump looks at him and like, what?
Yeah. No, and the problem is that Joe needs to understand that he's not going to – this president will never – this president will never let up any kind of like small little hiccup. You make that hiccup because he's been used to it. He's not been talking to the media for so many years. He knows that Trump knows that if he makes a hiccup, that kind of a hiccup, they'd be all after him.
No, but it's the sharpness of wit. That's what I really liked. But it was kind of like in the British way, like, you know, not yelling, not being pompous. It was just like, I don't know what you're talking about. I think you're confused. Anyway, proceeding on to the next topic. So it was that sort of situation, which was really impressive. We don't get to see Trump acting that way usually. So it was very nice to see. I must say, though, Biden, incoherent, irrelevant, and so boring. Like, I almost fell asleep through his 2-minute segments.
Well, I let me just put it to you this way. I can actually reenact his questions all the time. Geez, come on, man. That's not how this works. That if you do this and you do that, that's going to make it go better. Come on, man. And that was pretty much the summation of every response that I heard from him.
Look, you and I have had this discussion privately. I don't think Biden is the same Biden that ran for president in 2008. And he's certainly not the same Biden that left the vice presidency. He's aged. There is a decline, I think, in his mental agility. And that's just a fact. Anybody who tries to deny that, just go back a few years and watch old debate footage, old interviews of Biden. It's not the same man anymore. Age gets to all of us. It's not a hit on him. It is what it is. But for Democrats to try to deny that, and the 2-minute uninterrupted intervals, you could see he loses his train of thought. He starts to say incoherent things. We've been talking about that for a long time. This guy is not well.
Well, and by the way, can we please talk about the fact that he won't answer the tough questions? He
because
will not answer them. He will not. He refuses to answer. I mean, at least Trump answers the question. You may not like the answer, but he at least answers the question. But Joe refuses to answer any tough question. The only tough question he answered last night, which is going to give him big, big problems in many states, is his entire get rid of oil stance.
When I heard him say that, he tried to fix it like immediately after. I was like, what? But hey, Freudian slip, right? True intentions came out.
Exactly.
If I'm in Texas, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, I'm looking at that and going, what? What are you talking about? Obviously, the only people you care about are the people on the coast. But us in the middle of America, you don't care about us.
Well, and the other situation is very simple. The fracking situation. I heard many speeches from him saying that fracking had to be phased out.
He lied to the American people last night when he said he had never said that.
And it's just ridiculous to me. It's like, and the funny thing is, I love the signs that say, vote for Biden because make lying wrong again. And I'm like, your side lies as much as our side does. We just do it with a lot of, you know, and we don't consider them lies, actually. I think Trump kind of easily described what he considers hyperboles. He said, I say 3 million, and they're going to say, oh, he lied. It was 2.567. It's like, that it's, yes, this president speaks in hyperboles, but this president speaks in hyperboles not with ostentatious numbers. They're off, but they're not horrendously off in terms of, but this candidate that you have for us on the Democrat side, he is a liar. I mean, there you got to look at it that way. He did say that fracking was to be phased out. He just admitted to the entire American public that oil has to be phased out. And we, and Trump was like, we're the first time in energy independence that we had, we don't have to fight a war for energy. And you're saying we need to get rid of that idea? Are you out of your mind?
But that's the contrast. People on the coast, people that right now are running the Democratic Party and are running Joe Biden, those are the views they have. And they consider it very mainstream. So you go to middle America with those views and people are going to look at you like you've grown a third head, a second and third head, because it's like, what? What are you talking about? That's how we live. This is how we feed our families. What are you talking about? And that's the disconnect in this election. And look, I don't know if you've been following the early voting numbers here in Florida, but Democrats do not have the percentages of turnout that they need in order to win on election day. Just saying. So if these trends continue in key battleground states across the country, it doesn't look well for Biden.
I think that there's going to be a huge upset in this election, a huge upset for the media, a huge upset for liberals, because guess what? And someone at some point in the news media organizations or what have you, someone has to sit down and say, holy crap, we screwed up. If he wins re-election, they all screwed up because, again, they predicted the wrong loser.
Well, there's a legitimacy question to their coverage. There's also, nobody thinks they're impartial anymore. Everybody knows the, who they're voting for, who they're rooting for, and whose agenda they're pushing. So it's no longer a matter of that. Before, they would at least try to save face, oh, we're impartial. No. That is over. The mask have fallen off. So if Trump wins re-election and they're stuck with him for four more years, I don't know what they're going to do on election night. I've told my husband, what are they going to do, burn cars, burn buildings, start crying in the middle of the street? This is going to be horrible.
Well,
not part of me would entertained by it, but there is going to be a reaction, a gut reaction that is going to be extreme because they're just that disconnected from mainstream America.
Well, and on top of that, I mean, again, you're supposed to be this non-biased reporting. I mean, the Washington Post, the New York Times, I want you to listen very carefully. If you're going to say that you're non-partial, if you're going to say that you stand up for democracy and that you're and that without your voice, democracy ends in darkness, then please, please start actually reporting the other side. You can't just report your side. And on top of that, then, and if he wins, then obviously every poll, every single poll that you decided that you're going to put on the headline news has been wrong since the beginning of time. And if that is the case, then someone needs to get fired. In my viewpoint, there needs to be an overhaul.
It has to, look, they were wrong in 2016 because here's the thing. Trump attracted new voters to the process. And in 2016, the voting numbers they were using were the ones the same for Obama, etc. So if we have another upset, they're going to have to take a serious look at who is preparing these polls, what's the methodology, and face it. They can't continue to be in the bag for Democrats. That's only going to be successful on the coast. And what you're going to see from here, even after Trump is gone, hopefully in January 2025, the situation is going to be simple. You're going to have a lot of people in this country feel disenfranchised again. And there's going to be a lot of opportunities for new forms of media to pop up reacting to this sense of, no, mainstream doesn't represent me. Even Fox is starting to anger a lot of people with some of their coverage.
Oh, I've been upset with Fox for a little bit already. And you know about, I mean, Chris Wallace should be fired. At the end of the day, you cannot provide such a biased perspective, predict such a biased prediction, and then when you're wrong, I mean, it's like me as a salesperson. I have the sale, I have the money in the bag, but guess what? If I don't get the money in the bag, and as I said that I had the money in the bag, by the time that my deadline comes up, I lose, and I could potentially lose my job. That, why is the news media not getting away with, I mean, if I were the CEO of these people, I would basically say, you're fired. I want all of you out of here. I'm done. I am done predicting the incorrect thing. Because the news media, in order to maintain your power, in order to maintain your influence onto the American public, guess what? your predictions at least have to be somewhat accurate, not completely biased.
So it's interesting because eventually they're going to have to call. There has to be a culling. People have to be cleansed out of these systems because they're not representative of the people they're covering, which is the American people. And eventually they're going to get that. I'm not sure it's going to be when Trump is reelected. I think that may be too soon, but eventually they'll get that, and hopefully maybe coverage improves. But I think they have to get out of their bubble. They have to get out of their ivory towers. America is just not California, New York. There are other parts to the America that need coverage as well.
And not only that, there is no right or wrong answer here in terms of whose perspective is better. Every perspective is equal onto each other. And just because you have the best education in the world does not make you right, and it certainly does not make you the best. It just makes you more educated and more well-rounded. And that is something that, I mean, the egocentric perspective of I'm right because I have all this education behind me, because I'm from the coast, and you middle America who I consider stupid and without education, you got to listen to me because you don't know what you're talking about. And guess what? I'm a coastal big city Republican, and I'm telling you right now, I have no idea how to maintain a farm or do anything with a farm. So I don't pretend to know what the farmers know, and I don't pretend to know what the farmers should know. I know that the farmers are very different from me, and I'm happy to work with farmers because my viewpoint is I still need food on my goddamn plate.
I was going to say, you know that you can get meat at the supermarket. You go to the supermarket and get meat. You don't care about the rest of the process. Somebody else is
exactly. Gone. I don't. But at the same time, I'm not going to tell that person who is part of the process, well, you're dumb and stupid, and you should vote the way that I vote. I would never say that. Just because I don't want to be part of the process of how the food got there doesn't mean that I don't denigrate or belittle the people that provide that source to me.
And that's very respectable living. I mean, some of these farms, the really large and medium farms that provide food to these supermarkets, very successful businesses they run.
No kidding.
So any impression that, hey, these are just, you know, some very impoverished farmer in the middle of nowhere that's providing this food. No. These are very complex operations. Sometimes dynasties of families that are just dedicated to growing food. People have a lot of misconceptions about that. So every time I hear somebody try to dismiss middle America or try to put down a certain way of living, for me, it's just hypocritical and dishonest to say that those people don't know what they want, don't know what they're doing, and are just can't contribute to civilized society.
Well, and like I said, everyone's a little bit different, right? I mm-hmm. am really bad with my hands. I don't know how to make anything in terms of woodwork. I look at a hammer and I'm like, not my thing. But that's okay because it's someone else's thing. And you know what? Everyone's going to have different things. Everyone's going to have different methods of how they gain their money. And some of it is going to be family controlled, where they've been in business that way for so long. And some of it is, you know, you got a passion, you follow that passion and you make it profitable for you. And it's okay. It doesn't make you better than anybody else. It certainly makes you more wealthy. Sometimes it makes you more wealthy than others, but it does not make you better than others. Wealth does not equate to being better. Wealth simply equates to being lucky. And wealth equates to work and hard work. And everyone who is a hard worker at some point in their lives will have equitable living. But granted, just like Machiavelli said at one point, life is 50% skill and 50% chance. And no one on this planet can ever judge another person based on how they got to where they got based on those kinds of statistics in terms of chance versus skill.
It's interesting because in life, you're going to meet people with money, people with less money. And it's very interesting to find how you can find great people that are of humble means, but they have the best feelings and best intentions, and people that are wealthy and may, you know, not have the best intentions. So it's the way you look at it. Everybody's different, but just dismiss somebody because of their economic status is the very reason why our ancestors left Europe because we wanted a place where that wasn't the case. And right now, the media is the elitist class that wants to dismiss people because of their upbringing, education, and economic status. That is antithetical to the American dream.
Well, and not only that, if you look at, and I completely agree with that statement, if you also look at the fact that these are people that should be celebrated. I mean, for example, current Justice Barrett, who's going to be confirmed on Monday without any Democratic support. I mean, Barrett is a quintessential representation of the idea that you don't have to be the single mom going crazy and being a strong feminist to become successful. You can be parent of five and still be successful and still be religious and still maintain your values. And if you don't want to maintain them, for all you feminists out there, don't maintain them. It's up to you. That is not my answer. I'm not here to say one's better than the other, but they should both be respected mutually for what they are.
So my mother was a single mom, so I have a lot of respect for single moms. But I think we've arrived in a place in history, and I agree with you, that women now have a choice. If you want to, you can do both. You can go to school, you can get married, you can have that traditional family framework, but still be successful and still be a girl boss at work. You can do both. In the past, and in not so distant past, women didn't have that option. It was either one path or the other. So it's nice to see a Supreme Court justice that actually represents women in America today. Women that want to have a family, want to grow old with somebody who likes the stability of that framework, but at the same time has been hugely successful in their career and has proven that you can do both, and actually had five natural born children and then adopted two more from a underprivileged country. So it's very a beautiful story to hear about, a beautiful story to contemplate. And as a woman, what progress that represents.
Oh, without question. And I think that translates good to where I want to go next, which is the moral culpability of someone's political understandings of the world. And I loved how Biden, last night's debate, refused to answer any Hunter Biden questions, instead referring back to the Trump administration for the entire situation in terms of the fact that he was investigated for Russia. But he never confirmed nor denied the questions of Hunter Biden. So my question is, why wasn't Hunter Biden answered to? Why is Hunter Biden not a thing? I mean, if you had President Trump's, let's say Trump Jr., did the same thing that Hunter did, oh my God, it would be on every news media. It would have been the front page newsliner on the New York Times. It would be on the front.
Do you know why he can't address it?
Because it's true.
Exactly.
Which is fine. And actually, the problem is that you're going to get older voters who want those answers or want a response to that. And I think that this interview, this debate was incredibly lackluster to that. And on top of that, it basically didn't, if you're not willing to denounce or deny it, then obviously there's some element of it that it's true.
He can't. If you look at Biden's history before he was vice president, he was a senator, made a decent living, but in no way was this guy a wealthy man by congressional standards. Becomes vice president. By the time he leaves the vice presidency, guy is a millionaire. What do you think was happening during that time?
Well, and
what do you think was that dramatic wealth grow? Good investment?
Sure.
Let me smirk into my phone.
Well, I think that there's a sense of like, every politician is going to have an element of they're going to make money. Like, for example, Hillary with all her books and her tours and her foundation.
Speaking engagements.
Yeah, speaking engagements, right? So there's an element of popularity or just the mere fact that you have name recognition that you can start writing books and you can be instant. I mean, it doesn't matter how well you write. I mean, oh my, you can write piss poor job, but if your name is out there and everyone knows who you are, you're going to end up in New York Times bestsellers. So and that's a problem. That's a major problem for me.
It's a popularity contest. Remember, books have become just another way to show your popularity. Yeah. But I digress.
Go ahead. And I agree with that. And I think that if you think in those terms, Biden did something even more horrendous. He didn't do the speaking tours because obviously he can't speak. He didn't do the writing of the book because obviously, and by the way, if you're stuck in a basement for eons of time, I would assume that you can pick up a pen and start writing a book. Maybe you get some money out of it. But no, he didn't need to do that. Why did he not need to do that? And by the way, I released all my tax returns and I didn't get... And I want to tell him, yeah, but the funny part is you let your son do the dirty work for you. That's the difference. You know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, still the corruption, 47 years.
You can
years.
Be gifted any amount of money from a family member. That's always been a loophole in our financial situation. I can always give... Well, if you were related to me, Ariana, I can give you pretty much any amount of money because of the fact that we're family. And it does. I don't need to prove to the IRS that I am family and I'm providing a living for you. Now, if you...
Yes and no, but I'll turn off...
No, it's okay. No, you can say yes and no. There's a certain limitations and certain loophole, and I get that. Yeah. There are certain things, like, for example, I think it's over $550,000, but if you want to donate a house as a gift to a family member, you don't have to actually transition it with the IRS. I learned that because I had just recently inherited property. So there are certain aspects of that because if they're still living. If they're dead, it's a whole different perspective because that's part of that's a whole different law. But at the end of...
But with that said, let's add this disclaimer. You're not an attorney. This is not legal advice. You're just giving your own
personal
experience.
Sure, yes, exactly. Thank you. Yes. Don't sue me. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that there's a certain level of just disgust as far as that's concerned. And let's all face it. Hunter Biden is by no means a morally apt person.
Look, here's the thing. He could be a perfectly fine young man. But here's what I do know. He was in corrupt business dealings. I think he was working hard to make sure that his father was provided for post-presidency. And he had basically a fling with his sister-in-law after his father passed away. A lot of things there give me pause. And having the fling with the sister-in-law after the husband had passed away is the least one that gives me pause. We're talking about being your daddy's lackey and going out there and using his influence and name to shake up people for money. That is very, very disturbing.
Well, and on top of that, and I think the CEO of the company that Hunter ran at some point is now coming out saying that the entire notion that Hunter and Joe never had business discussions is ludicrous and malarkey, in Joe's favorite word, malarkey. it's quite telling. And again, where's the media? Where's the news? Where's everyone making a controversy over this? Nowhere to be found, because obviously they all want Biden to win and they're willing to overlook any kind of situation when it comes to his son. And by the way, let us not forget that during the actual primaries, this was also brought up, and actually it was Kamala Harris said it should have, even if it were legal, it should have never happened. So they understand that it's a moral misgiving. They know that it's wrong. They're not willing to talk about it anymore because they know that it hurts them, but they know it's wrong and they're willing to stand up for it anyway.
They know it's wrong and they don't care because they know they're going to get a pass. Yeah. But I find it interesting, you know, the CEO that worked with Biden's son coming out before the debate, and, you know, laying out his evidence that he has laptops and cell phones and all of this. I don't know. The whole thing just reminded me so much of what Trump did to Hillary back in 2016. And I'm like watching that going, wow, Trump, I respect you. You're a gangster, dude. I love you.
I think the president has done some amazing things in terms of that kind of. I mean, he literally, for people to understand, this president is his own publicist. He has to publicize everything in order for him to even get his message across, because there's so many news media outlets that say on the contrary to his entire belief system. So how is it that he's going? I mean, when he says, I'm battling not just you, Joe, I'm battling the media and I'm battling everybody else. He's absolutely right. And he has to do that kind of thing in order for him to get his side, or at least some defense of his side, out there. And I congratulate for him. I don't mind anything that comes out of Trump's mouth, because half the time I know the frustration and anger he's feeling, because it's to be attacked on all sides 24 hours a day is ridiculous. It's absolutely mind-numbing.
Well, I don't think he has patience for that anymore. And he said it in that 60 Minutes interview that I don't know if you heard that he did a 60 Minutes interview. It went south. He thought it was very disrespectful, and he leaked the entire unedited version. I watched the unedited version, and it's precisely what we're just talking about. It's biased. It's manipulative. It's frustrating. Like, I'm listening to her questions, and it's like, really? Like, are you even trying to be impartial? No, you're debating me. You're trying to be part of the story. Instead of asking me questions, you're trying to be part of the story. And I think Trump has faced that since the moment he came down the escalator at Trump Tower in New York and announced his presidency. People want to make themselves part of the Trump story, and especially the media wants to.
And
do
I
that.
Understand where the media is coming from, because as far as news ratings, the more controversial it is, the more ratings you get, and the more attention you get to your network. So I get where, at a monetary standpoint, where that's coming from. But at the same time, at some point, someone has to say, well, when do we actually start reporting the news and stop being, you know, dimwits about this? And I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but I hope it does.
We'll see. I'm hopeful, maybe with a new crop of people. But it's very frustrating from my perspective.
Well, if Trump wins the election, I think the media has to then do a lot of soul searching as to what they really are trying to do. And I think that I hope that there would be a lot of firing. And I already have 5 reporters in my top. I'm thinking about that should be immediately fired. Don Lemon, let's see, Chris Cuomo. I would certainly get, I would even think of Rachel Maddow. I just don't like her. But these caricatures on these news media is really making it hard. It's like, it's almost like going to war with our side. It is literally saying, we don't care if it's right. We don't care if it's even factual. We're going to use it against you because we just don't like you. It's personal.
It's personal.
So let it be personal.
Absolutely. So your predictions. First off, have you voted?
No, I'm voting when I get home. I get home next Thursday. Next Wednesday and Thursday morning at 9 a.m. at 7 a.m. I'll be at my voting booth voting.
Well,
I'm not behind the trend.
Because...
My view. I actually like voting on election day, so I'm actually I'm ahead of time as far as I have a tradition.
Gotcha. Correct. So you're ahead of your own schedule.
I don't follow the American schedule. I follow my schedule as the founders want me to.
Predictions?
I don't know. I think you're going to get an upset. Of course, I will say Trump will win simply because I want Trump to win. But I think Trump winning is not enough at this point. We need the House. We desperately need the House. I hope we get the House. I think we'll maintain Senate majority. And if that's the case, then we would consider that a red wave.
I think Trump will win. I think they're going to cry. Liberals are going to cry on election night again. And I look forward to it.
Well, I think that I can understand why they're crying, because they have a news media that keeps saying, you're going to win, you're going to win, you're going to win, you're going to win. And then they realize, no, you didn't win. It's like the worst prize. I mean, like I said, at some point, the Democrats have to start thinking, well, we need to start firing these news reporters who keep lying to us about how we're winning.
Well, you know, I don't think they understand their public. I don't think they understand the American people. And that's on them. It's on them to understand the subjects they study. It's not our job as the American people to tell them, hey, you need to do a better job. They need to figure that out on their own, or the market is not going to reward their continued disconnect. And that's just a fact. So hopefully they get on it. If not, we're going to have so many new conservative news outlets spring up, because there's going to be
a demand for it. See that with just radio. Radio is a conservative means of getting out the word. And I think that the more and more we become more powerful, the more that you're going to get, like AON, for example, American One Network is already out there, which is a conservative news And you're going to get more and more conservative news outlets. And I think you're going to see a new, brand new kind of like a triumph of news organizations. I just don't. And, you know, the funny thing is, I had a friend of mine who pretty much described this period very accurately. We are living in a new era of yellow journalism. Journalism that is not accurate, that is never, that is completely biased and has an agenda. And I don't know when,
Absolutely. I agree with that. And I will say, though, that this show is basically a byproduct of that new trend where people want just an alternative form to consume news, and that is not scripted and guided by big politics of journalism nowadays. So it's there, it's a growing trend, and I think especially millennials are going to lead that trend. So, Carlos, thanks for coming on the show. Always happy.
We're from the great state of Georgia. I'm headed over to South Carolina in 2 days. I'm actually going to take a cemetery tour today, so I'm excited to get my Halloween spirit going. And I will send pictures.
Ooh, send me pictures.
But otherwise, thank you for having me on the show, Ariana. Always a pleasure.
You thank too. You. Bye-bye. So much for tuning in, and I just want to take a moment and say thank you for making the show such a success. We launched the show in the midst of the COVID pandemic, and you guys have shown so much interest and love and dedication to the show on every episode, and it's been a blessing to have an outlet where I can speak directly to you about these issues and have conversations that hopefully are both educational and interesting. So thank you for that opportunity. I honestly have been very humbled by this experience this year, and it's been a great moment in my life, and I'm very happy that I can do this. So thank you for that support. It makes all the difference for me. And if you know anybody, a friend, family member who's interested in this kind of coverage, commentary, that would enjoy this program, please let them know that we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you hear your podcast, we're available. So check us out. Subscribe to the show so you can get the latest episodes. So please spread the word. We're continuing to grow, getting new content, and it's been a roller coaster of a ride, but there's so much coming on the horizon. So thank you again for your support. Guys, we'll have a new episode next week. Next week, we're going to tackle something a little bit interesting. We're going to talk to a millennial mom who feels she doesn't really fit into the political spectrum. And we'll discuss what millennials think on certain topics, how that's different from past generations. It should be a good one. So tune in next week. Thanks, guys.